Welcome to Talk at 10, your weekday interview program here on KRTS Marfa Public Radio. I'm Tom Michael, and I'll be your host today. Well, it's going to be a quiet summer for the most part for Ballroom Marfa, but preparations are being made for their big fall show. It opens on the 27th of September, and this year's fall show is titled The Marfa Sessions. It's described in the press release as, quote, a series of sound projects embedded within the public spaces and private corners of Marfa to create a sonic portrait of this unusual West Texas town. And basically, with the ballroom as the hub and the starting point for a citywide tour, there'll be site-specific and I imagine probably surprising spots in Marfa where one will encounter audio art on the public streets. We're joined in the studio by one of its curators, Regine Basha, and one of the artists in this group show, Nina Kachadourian. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Now, Regine, you were an adjunct curator to shows in Art House in Austin. People may know you from that work and a co-founder of Fluent Collaborative there. But you recently left Texas for New York City. Regine, this seems to be a mixture of land art, public art, street art. What attracted you to this project?
Well, a couple of things, Tom. I've been to Marfa, you know, several times to, of course, see the Judd Foundation, being with, you know, from an art background and whatnot. Ever since I moved to Texas 5 years ago, I think I visited at least 8 or 10 times, just falling in love with the place itself. And also realized that, you know, Marfa seems somewhat polarized between, you know, the art part of it, the Judd Foundation and the Chinati Foundation, as well as kind of the rest of the town, Ballroom Marfa being another site for art, but really just the general sort of daily life is in stark contrast to the high art that's available to see here. And I was interested in perhaps bridging the two in a way by embedding perhaps more accessible art that really has to do with the experience of being in the town.
So unleashed from the white walls of the art space, of gallery space, we have public installations, so everyday interactions.
Exactly. And also so that visitors as well as people who have lived here for many years could see the town in a new light. And I think through listening, the works, in fact, are, you know, fairly invisible in that they will be sound generated. So you'll be listening to the works rather than, well, in some cases you'll see certain structures. But through the listening, you'll actually perhaps have another lens through which you'll look at where you are.
Are we envisioning dangling headphones throughout town? Or?
No, not necessarily. You know, there's only perhaps one or two cases where we're going to place speakers in a particular spot. And in other cases, there will be structures that you enter or, you know, rooms or buildings that you enter in which either a narrative will appear or some kind of sonic component that relates to the either history or geography of that very place you're standing in.
How well formed is it right now? Here we are in early July.
Well, I'm actually visiting right now to secure those sites, so I probably shouldn't announce exactly what those are until they're absolutely secured. But we are, you know, I would say 80% there, and another few visits, and we'll actually get to make a map. We're going to design a visitor center at the ballroom, so people will be encouraged to start there. They'll take a map, and then they'll get to go around town to discover these sites.
And this show opens in late September.
That's great.
And it is their fall show at Ballroom Marfa over on San Antonio and Dean Streets here in Marfa. Well, one of the artists is Nina Kachadourian, and she's also the brainchild behind the Marfa Jingles. Nina's represented by Sarah Meltzer Gallery in New York and Catherine Clark Gallery in San Francisco. I know you've done inventive sound pieces in the past. In fact, talking to people in town who recall your art, they recall pieces such as the natural car alarms. Why don't you just describe that
project? Sure. I like to work a lot from very everyday, mundane situations. And often, in fact, mistakes, just everyday mistakes, misunderstandings are good starting points for me for artworks. And Natural Car Alarms was actually the result of a mistake. It was the misunderstanding of being in Trinidad on a residency and hearing the sound of a bird that I mistook for a car alarm and just kind of crosswired my regular urban life in New York with this very remote place that I was visiting. So when I got back to New York, I designed a set of three car alarms that used only bird sounds and worked very much like the real thing, but where you had to kind of do a double take because what you heard wasn't the normal sound.
So if someone would disturb the car instead of the car alarm sound, yes, you would hear something
you
more
heard
like
shrieking
bird.
Birds. And I think when people hear bird song, they imagine something rather pretty. But these alarms, it was important to me that they were as loud and obnoxious in a way as disruptive as real alarms are. And so I hoped that the confusion they would generate for someone walking down the street in New York would be very similar to the confusion that I felt in Trinidad, where you'd sort of have to stand there and go, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. I think I know what this is, but something's not quite right. And kind of rethink all the sound you hear around you as a result.
Longtime public radio listeners may have heard a segment, I believe it was on All Things Considered, that featured this piece. And if I could share a quick personal story, also an urban refugee, one of the first times in far west Texas, I pulled over the car because I heard this terrible sound. Something was wrong with my vehicle. I get out and I realize it's crickets.
And
there's nothing wrong with the vehicle. If you're just joining us, this is Talk at 10 on Marfa Public Radio. We're here with Regine Basha and Nina Khachaturian. And they're here as part of the Marfa Sessions. It's a ballroom show that opens September 27th, later this year. Well, let me ask you, Nina, a bit about the jingles, the Marfa jingles. You've recorded some already, and let's set the stage here. We've announced this before on the radio station, but basically you are encouraging area businesses to participate and work with you to describe their business, and you would create a jingle for them that we'd later hear on the radio.
And not just businesses. They can be clubs, they can be individuals, they can be people who things, organizations that don't really have jingles. I think part of the point of this project is in a way to stretch the jingle form to include things that aren't usually advertised at all.
And I know you had a slow response at the start, which is probably not too abnormal out here. You people kind of got to meet you or you reach out to them.
And I think one other thing that stood in the way is that people aren't used to seeing things being given away for free. So I think there was a little bit of suspicion around, why are the jingles free? I actually got an email from someone who asked me that. And I wrote back saying, well, you know, I'm doing this because it's actually part of a larger project. And that kind of seemed to, you know, reassure this person. But now I've had so many people step up that I'll be lucky if I can write this many jingles.
Okay. Well, who's stepped up?
Well, we have jingles.
And is there something we can play? And I believe you have some rough mixes here for us?
Yes. We have been working very hard this week. And we have seven jingles now that are done. They are for the Big Men in Texas Mountain Travel Guide, Get-Go, the Marfa Public Library, Farm Stand, the Davis Mountain Broom Shop, and Food Shark, and then perhaps the strangest one, which I wrote for the Marfa Lights, who really didn't step up and ask for a jingle. But, you know, I wanted there to be a jingle for something that doesn't have jingles. And on my last visit here in February, I was very struck by the experience of standing out there with tourists from here, there, and everywhere, and all of us going, you see that? I don't know. I think I see something. What do you see? Oh, I think they're headlights. No, I think there's guys with flashlights out there, and on like that. And kind of the same conversation that kept rolling around, and I saw amazing things both nights that I went, and imagined that from the point of view of the lights, they must be upset that there are all these people kind of doubting them all the time. So my Marfa Lights jingle basically takes the theme of, we are the lights, you're out here to look at us, and you don't believe us, you don't believe in us, but we will continue to believe in you. And it's a kind of over-the-top, bombastic rock ballad, just the biggest, hugest, tear-jerking finish we could come up with. And we had a lot of fun with that one. It's the one we've been calling the Guilty Pleasures Jingle because none of us write or produce music like that, and it was a lot of fun to make.
Can we hear a sample?
Here we go.
No one writes jingles for us. Most people doubt that we're real. When your very existence makes people laugh, in your oversized visitor center, we can see you as you watch us from afar, and we'll still do our best.
Have a little faith.
That was a sample from the Marfa Jingles, written from the perspective of the Marfa Lights, not an organization or business, but a abnormal phenomena, a mysterious phenomena that probably needs some clarification. Again, we're speaking about the Marfa Sessions, and let me ask you, Regine, you're working with two other curators. One of them, Rebecca Gates, has been a guest on our program before, and we haven't yet met Lucy Raven, but how do the three of you work together as distant co-curators?
That's a good question. Well, Lucy Raven is an artist in her own right and an editor, and both Lucy Raven and Rebecca Gates have formed a partnership for an audio magazine that's called The Relay Project, and I, as a curator, had actually launched or hosted the Relay Project in Texas a few years back at Art House as part of a program there. And so we just got to know each other. I really loved what they were doing. I was already in conversation with Ballroom Marfa about a sound-related show. Rebecca, having played here in Marfa and having been in conversation with them herself, also came through. And it just naturally came together as, why don't we all work together on this sound show? It makes total sense to us.
And where physically are you three?
Constantly moving.
But I mean, you're based in New York, and Rebecca is based in somewhere in the East.
We've been working together on this for the past 2 years, and over those 2 years, I moved. I recently moved from Austin back to Brooklyn, where I originally was from. Rebecca moves around from Chicago to Portland to Rhode Island to New York. She's a musician. She's on the road constantly. Lucy Raven, originally from Arizona, does projects all around the country, but is based in Brooklyn at the moment. So we communicate by Skype mostly, actually. Thank God for Skype. Yeah. And we try to meet whenever we can.
Let's discuss the artists in the exhibit. In addition to Nina, you have such luminaries as Louise Lawler. People may know her from this year's Whitney Biennial. Also, locals may know her because her work builds upon work familiar to Marfan, such as the work of Dan Flavin.
That's right. Yes, it'll be great to have her here. In fact, we just secured a wonderful site that is that belongs to Chinati, and it's an old sort of castle or an old pool that's no longer in use. And the piece is going to be called Bird Call. It's a piece she'd done a few years back that I'd seen at the Dia Beacon out in Beacon, New York. It was placed out in a garden, and it's basically a parrot. It's the sound of a parrot that had been trained to sing the names of various minimalist artists. So you'll have, for instance, Carl Andre, you know, or Donald Judd, and it's just this mimicry. And you have to really pay attention to understand what the parrot's saying, but once you hear it, you can't not hear it anymore. And the parrot names about, I don't know, 11 different artists, and all male artists. So I think it's Louise Lawler's kind of slight kick to the male canon of minimalist art. So we wanted to, we're happy that actually Chinati is willing to, you know, provide Ballroom and host this particular piece that in fact is a tongue-in-cheek, you know.
Chinati is also working with Ballroom and your group for the collaborative performance. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Steve Roden and Stephen Vitiello, who visited last year, who are collaborating on a separate project that's going to be out in the sort of middle of a field somewhere, sort of hut. So Steve Roden and Stephen Vitiello, as they did the Chinati tour, were really struck by how the aluminum Judd boxes resonated within the barracks, within the site they're placed in, and just did an impromptu performance, or, you know, kind of casual sort of call and response to each other to test how the sound resonates with, you know, kind of all that metal in there, and became really excited about perhaps doing a performance in the space. And yes, it took speaking to Chinati about it, and part of our opening weekend will be a performance by them in the space. I think the audience will be outside, and you'll hear the sounds through speakers outside, but you'll sort of see them almost like fish in a tank.
Well, that's very generous to allow such a space to be used.
Yes, it is. It certainly is. And it, I think it just is a signal to how, you know, I think everyone agrees when there's a good idea and there's good art, you know, we all have to sort of make it happen.
The Marfa Sessions, the fall show at Ballroom Marfa, our guests in the studio right now in early July, Nina Khachaturian and Regine Basha. Regine, do you mind running down the list of the other artists in the show?
So the artists in the Marfa Sessions are Emily Jassir, Nina Khachaturian, who's here with us, Christina Kubisch, Louise Lawler, Inigo Manglano Ovalle, Kathy Matthews, Neurotransmitter, who are Valerie Tevere and Angel Navarez, Dario Robleto, Steve Roden and Stephen Vitiello, Steve Rowell with Simpark, and Deborah Stratman and Stephen Badgett, as well as Julianne Swartz. There are a lot of artist teams in this project, so you were mentioning about the amount of communications and so on, and I do see this as sort of an overall collaboration between the three of us as curators, as between several artists themselves, as well as artists with the town. So there's several layers to this. But I have to say, Ballroom Marfa has been excellent hosts, and they have been, you know, really part of the organization and sort of central point of our communication. So we're really lucky to have to be working with them.
Three curators, 11 artists. What were your criteria to choose these specific artists?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd worked before on similar kinds of projects. For instance, in a town and in public spaces, there was a project in New York called the Brewster Project with about 35 artists. And then after that, there was another exhibition called Treble, which was at the Sculpture Center, which was, again, with 22 artists. So the amount of artists isn't really unusual in the sense that, you know, it's some of the work is actually borrowed while others are made for the show. But the...
And how many in this group show are made specifically for the Marfa Sessions here in Marfa?
Five. Yeah. Five that include...
Nina, is that one of yours?
Yeah, that's okay. This is custom.
Okay. That's right. Exactly. And I think what I was getting at is that we wanted to approach this by inviting artists who are not necessarily considered sound artists per se, because there is a sort of genre or field of sound art in which perhaps more known in Europe than in the States, but that really comes from electronic-based experimental music in one hand or sound engineering. And in this case, we were really interested in mingling artists who have a varied practice, perhaps coming from like a more conceptual-based practice or something that, or a kind of way of working that has to do with collaboration in public space, or visual artists who are also involved in making sound work, which is, I guess, Steve Roden's case, for instance, and Stephen Vitiello, who work in painting and sculpture mm-hmm. as well. So we were really interested in kind of the mix itself of the variations of how different artists approach sound, both conceptually and physically and purely musically. So it's not your traditional sound art show, which I think is very important to us as curators as well.
And Nina, as one of the artists who are creating an original piece for this exhibition, what challenges have you found here in this landscape?
You know, Regine said this before I came out here, and it turned out to really be true that I've been trying to get a lot of the information for these jingles remotely via email, kind of corresponding with people, and it's been, you know, sort of in fits and starts. And once I got here, I mean, today I must have run into, you know, half my quote-unquote clients just sitting out there by the food shark, or it's been very easy once I've gotten here to kind of find people and talk to them and bump into them and introduce myself, and there they all are, you know? And so...
So that's been one of the advantages.
Oh, a huge advantage. It's I almost wish I'd come here a week early just to meet more people and get some information from them, and I probably could have squeezed out a few more jingles, but hopefully I'll go home with some information and can write a few more once I'm back in Brooklyn.
Here's another jingle sample.
Our brooms are made on an authentic 1850s Shaker broom-making machine, and we can make all kinds. The one you hear sweeping right now is a colonial kitchen broom, but we've got fireplace sweepers, utility brooms, cobwebbers, and whisks, too.
You're creating jingles, real jingles, for these businesses. And so you are collecting data on them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe both of you could address this. I know at the beginning, Regine, you said something to the effect where it's perhaps an increasing polarized community region. There are certain people that attend gallery shows, and there are certain people who don't. Perhaps by unhooking the art from the white space gallery walls and setting them around town, you're inviting other people to collaborate. Although some people may think it's just another art project. And I'll just give you just a quick example. There were some artist musicians in from Portland who decided to spend some time here and make fake websites for all the businesses in town. So they made a website for the Chamber, I think for the radio station here, for the Chinati Foundation, for other businesses. And the ultimate irony, or perhaps annoyance, was that many of these businesses really needed
real website
design help.
Right.
But the work was more about them than it was about us. And so are the jingles more about you, the artist, or about the business?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think the important thing to point out here for me, too, is that this is a jingle project. It's a music project in a way. And I actually lead two lives, one as a visual artist and one as a singer-musician. But it is, in a way, also a portrait of Marfa through songs. It's a way of sampling a few, you know, businesses, people, personalities, ideas, priorities, and kind of showing them, in a way, I hope, back to this community. And so people will recognize voices of some of the voiceovers that I will not give away secrets as to who they are, but they'll recognize people they know. And I hope this project, in a way, reintroduces people to those people they already live amidst.
Will it be the usual suspects?
I'm not sure who the usual suspects are.
Probably the ones that come forward.
Yeah, well,
or respond via email.
We have cast the net wide, I hope, and have you know, gotten a range of businesses and people and organizations who you know, wanted jingles. I think that it is important to me that this project is accessible. It's going to wind up on the radio. You know, all kinds of people will hear it. Anyone who listens to the radio may hear it. And it's been very important to me to come and make this here. I think that the idea of working in response very specifically to a place and to a community is what sort of sparked this whole idea. How can I get to know Marfa? I'm not from here. I have no family connection here, no background here whatsoever. This is a very, you know, to me, unexplored part of the country. And this project has been a way of getting myself here and meeting some people here and working with them. These jingles have all been recorded in Marfa with musicians who live in Marfa. And
it's a fantastic concept.
Thank you.
But let me also pose that question to Regine about the person on the street who does encounter the art here. How is the gallery curator helping to bridge that gap? How are they doing that?
Well, that's an interesting question because it's at the core of a lot of this kind of work that I think has been practiced in the art fields over 10, 15 years now, this kind of what used to be called relational aesthetics or this, you know, collaborative model and so on. And in the past, I've really learned that if you already are arriving at this project assuming that you're going to fix something or provide something or you know, if there's a functionality in which you think that you're going to serve or service a targeted group of people, then you're already sort of, I think, falling short of the idea, or you're already kind of making an assumption that's impossible to meet. You know, art, perhaps the question is, does art have a function? I mean, at the core of this whole thing. And perhaps it's better to even say that the work that's being made and the artists that we're bringing are making works really inspired by Marfa. I wouldn't say that they're servicing Marfa. The people that you've mentioned who came to make websites and so on perhaps raised hopes that they would service in a functional way. And because that expectation was almost elided, it created disappointment. So, I mean, we're certainly well aware of that. You know, I don't see art as necessarily a service per se. I think it does have a role in that it can change people's lives. I do believe that. That's why I'm in the field. How that happens, I can't really track. But I'm interested in the triggers and putting those triggers out there and seeing what happens. And sometimes it's really nothing that you can plan. Sometimes it's Nina meets somebody through the project, and yet a conversation goes in another direction, and somehow it changes her relationship to the place or this person's, you know, lifelong friendship. I don't know. So part of the process is really opening those doors, seeing what happens. It's almost like a human connection project more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great answer because sometimes we have probably more art projects per capita than in many towns in the United States. And in fact, I'm thinking of one woman who moved to Marfa, emigrating from a high point in the New York art world. When approached by another artist collecting some stories, said, "Oh no, not another! I can't be part of another art project."
Sure.
But I'm not complaining. I think it's wonderful. What a great place to be. And a lot of times, too, Marfa is a blank slate to people, or you know, a beautiful and vacant face that they can then present their thoughts and ideas on. Nina, I wanted to ask you about one of your pieces, the want ad piece. I just wanted to explore the legality of that. I'm always uncomfortable recording people unless they know about it.
Uh-huh.
But what a neat piece. So there's a want ad in the Village Voice. And you give the dimensions of a typical prison cell, which is, 6x9x7?
That's right.
And you invited people to call in to say, advertising that this was a real apartment.
Yeah, it's kind of how it happened. I made this a sound piece collaboration with my old friend Julia Meltzer. And what we did is we were invited to be in a show that was called Constriction. And we were really responding very specifically to that word and that way that that word plays out in New York City around real estate, where people are going crazy all the time trying to find the cheapest, best, you know, best deal place to live, and how one part of your brain is sort of always on this real estate question in a way, certainly when you move there. And so as a way, in a way, of testing the limits of this, we ran an ad in The Voice, as you described, that advertised a room 6x9x7 feet. We did not say what those proportions referred to. We cited our imaginary apartment in a very desirable part of the city. It was in the West Village, and it cost $512 a month, which was a great deal at the time. And basically had an outgoing message that said, "Thanks for calling about the room. Please tell us a little bit about yourself." And for the next 24 hours, we collected over 200 different messages from different people that came in. And what people would do, this may have an interesting connection to the Jingle Project now that I think about it, because what people would do is they would make these kind of mini 1 minute long commercials for themselves spontaneously. "Here's who I am. I'm a really nice person. You really should meet me. I've got some great hobbies. I'm a really good cook. I really like animals." This kind of thing. I make a lot of money. And they'd sometimes tell you the salary that they make. And so we had, you know, these kinds of messages stacking up, and they became like a portrait again of a potential resident of this one room in this neighborhood that we invented. And then the way the piece is shown is that we built a room to exactly the size of those proportions and play the soundtrack into that room. So you stand in this room, hear all these different people who kind of you start to imagine, and what might they look like and what kind of personality comes across. And you also just think about the insanity in New York about what people are willing to sort of do to live cheap. I mean, that is a tiny room.
Were any of the phone messages commenting on that?
You know, one person or two would sort of pause and say, "I'm calling about the room. It says here 6x9x7 feet. Well, that might be a little small, but I'd like to hear more." You know, they kind of, you can hear them thinking out loud as they realize how crazy and tiny that
That's
really
a bed
is.
And a pair of slippers, maybe.
It's a jail cell, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a piece that, you know, we were naive and rather young and early in our careers when we made it, and we didn't think in some ways about the possible legal necessity of bleeping out a number in everybody's phone number, or we didn't, you know... We didn't actually do anything to disguise identity, and it was shown in a gallery at the time that we weren't so worried about tons of people seeing it, really. So I don't know if we'd do it that way again, but that is how it happened back then.
But I wanted to share another local story. When I first came to town, and there's this buzz of, "I'm going to buy a place here and live."
Right.
And there's the ice plant, you know, on the east end of town, and there's a sign, a really strange sign that said, "For sale, call this number." And so I called this number. It's a very strange message. And this was like 6 years ago, and I left a message. And while I was leaving that message, I thought, "I wonder if this is someone's art project."
Yeah, yeah. Well, I fell prey to one of these sorts of things in New York, where I answered an ad for an incredibly cheap loft sublet. And it turned out that these people were basically farming people's phone numbers to use to sell to you know, phone marketing, telemarketing people. So a lot of people fell into that snare. It was sort of a way to quickly get a lot of info from people.
Well, we've been discussing the Marfa Sessions at Ballroom Marfa this fall. It's the fall show. We're here with one of the curators, Regine Basha, and also one of the artists, Nina Khachaturian. maybe just some final words. Regine, here we are in early July. What are your hopes? What do you need to wrap this project up for the fall? And what are you hoping from our listening audience?
Well, I'm so pleased that actually, Tom, we're able to collaborate with you on the radio, because so much of this is sound related, and the fact that Nina and her band, Adam Bork and
David Beebe,
are working together, and their work will be heard. And we're also going to have, I think, a performance at the opening weekend with them. So if you don't catch it on the radio, you also just see them at the opening weekend.
By the way, a fabulous pickup band for a small town.
I lucked out. I mean, it is crazy how great these guys have been. And Gori, too, who produced this whole project. So.
And how exciting that, here we are in Marfa, surrounded by art, that there's some audio art here, too, at the radio station. We're particularly excited about that, so we can share some pieces with the audience.
That's right. Well, that's what I was leading to say, that we find a sort of home here and a forum for audio art, and that the radio station is already a context for it, so it's great. I'm just hoping people will engage and walk around, find the little corners in which we place these things, and it's both going to be hopefully a combination of intentional visits by people from all over the place, as well as happenstance visits, just walking around and, what is that? Let's go in. Or, I hear something. And
a lot of serendipity.
Yeah,
in this project.
I think, we want it to be seamless with the town in some way, so that some of it's sort of ambiguous, just like the Marfa lights are. You're not sure if you're hearing birds or if you're hearing a recording of a bird, that kind of idea.
Well, congratulations. It's really wonderful to have such talent here. Thank you, Regine. Thank you, Nina.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
There are mountains here, and they're all so near. There are hills and springs right at your door. Has it been a while since you've been outside, since your heart has opened to the sky? If you read our guide, what you see inside will make you crave the open road. And when that road unfolds and the hills turn gold, then your heart can float in the Texas sky. Take a look and see all the treasures there are yours to find. Texas comes alive, and it's all inside the Big Bend and Texas Mountain Guide.
You can pick up your Big Bend and Texas Mountain Travel Guide at any area chamber of commerce.
We might have grown it, we might have raised it, we might have foraged, we might have baked it. It grew on our land, we made it by hand. It's all at Marfa's own great farm stand. Burritos, purses, and empanadas, cheese boards and jewelry, crochet and crewelry. There's fresh cut onions, honey and tamales, heirloom tomatoes, egg soap and pies. If you need a duckling, or a dachshund mailbox, or a doggy cookie, croissants or pet rocks, if you want a pumpkin or manure of llama,
a fireplace, salt scrubs, seedling scarves. Come to Marfa's farm stand, and you'll be with your friends, babies and strollers, cowgirls and policemen, district attorneys, ranchers and librarians, hipsters and octogenarians. It grew on our land, we made it by hand. You can only find it at Marfa's farm stand. And every Saturday, we're at South Island. Come by the farm stand. Food.